Welcome to Depth of Field. I'm your host, Penny De Los Santos. I'm so excited about today. We have an amazing guest, Orlando Soto. He's the executive pastry chef at La Bernardin, which I would call one of the best restaurants in New York City, or fine dining restaurants in New York City. It's definitely one of the top three. You know, it's the place you go to for big life events, big moments of celebration. Orlando also has, you have a degree in chemical engineering, and then you ended up going to ICE here in New York City, Institute for Culinary Education. And I'm so curious. So you had this degree in chemical engineering, not easy, very difficult. My brother's an electrical engineer, so I understand your mentality so much more after learning this.
Very linear at times.
Oh my gosh.
It's kind of tricky. Yeah.
But also, like, you really have to be very smart, very patient, and studious, you know, very committed. Mm. So yes, you went to ICE. You worked at a bunch of different restaurants here in New York City. And then you made it to, would you call being at La Bernardin, which was just named the best restaurant in the world?
Oh God. Yeah.
By La Liste.
Yeah.
That's huge.
Oh, thank you.
I saw that image of Eric Repair in the kitchen kind of telling everybody. That was pretty.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. We are kind of very in the moment right now, kind of surreal, which is good. Yeah. All teamwork.
Awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Anyway, everybody, the executive chef of La Bernardin, executive pastry chef of La Bernardin, Orlando Soto, welcome to Depth of Field.
Thank you, Penny. Thank you for having me. I'm super excited and grateful for this opportunity to talk a little bit about, I don't know, what moves us in this field, which, you know, I think despite every field being different, arts are arts, and kind of we all struggle in very similar ways. So, and we find inspiration in ways that celebrate life ultimately. So I think that that's a huge thing. Thank you for having me.
Well, I mean, and I love, I mean, my career in photography changed when I decided to focus on food. And I do think as a photographer, food is an incredible avenue to explore visually. And I do think there's a lot of overlap. I find chefs to be incredibly creative, obviously. So yeah, I mean, for me, it's like, I want to have a lot of people from different backgrounds who, you know, have to be creative, but also have to produce every day. You know, it's another thing to be creative in your own time and be more of an artist and kind of create work when you're inspired. But it's a little different when you have to do it to produce income and a livelihood. Anyway, so welcome. I'm excited to have you.
Thank you.
I'm going to jump right into the questions, but yeah. I did want to ask you, so you get out of chemical engineering and how did you end up going into ICE culinary education?
Yeah. So engineering didn't start as engineering. I went to school in Puerto Rico, to college in Puerto Rico. And originally I started out in pre-med, and on my second year, you know, like the first year you take classes with so many different people from different fields, because we're all taking like the intro courses, you know, like calculus and I don't know, biology and all these other things. And while I love the stuff that I was learning, I really gravitated towards like the engineering side of things, and pharmaceuticals, mostly bioengineering, if you will. But there's no program for that in Puerto Rico, not yet anyway. So I kind of merged the two. So I ended up doing like the core part of the pre-med program and then finished in chemical engineering. And I did my last 2 years, I spent my last two summers in up here in the Northeast at Yale University and MIT in their bioengineering programs.
Wow.
That's when the pastry bug started getting me, because I was working in research during the summers, and we were developing, you know, like drugs or therapy for autoimmune disease or HIV, like models for it. And which are things that I've always been, you know, are very present to me. And in the process, I was getting so stressed out with the lab work that I started baking at night to bring stuff the next day for my lab mates for lab meetings on Fridays, or, you know, like before we would start like the day. I had like a little like a vegan stint during college too. So it was a very fun time for me to like test out things that weren't necessarily, you know, normal in Puerto Rico because it's a very like meat centric culture. And next thing you know, I'm like making ice creams and making all these other things and like sharing them. And I'm like, ooh, like I'm actually liking this. And, you know, that immediate like gratification from the other part, like the person enjoying the stuff that you made, and kind of like asking you about it, and you being equally interested in like what, how it came to be, really got me. And when I hit 23, 24, almost 25, I was like, if I want to pursue this, I only have a short window. Yeah. And I can always come back to engineering if that's not the, if it doesn't work out. So I graduated, I worked for a little bit, and I signed up at ICE. Originally, the plan was 1 year, 1 year in the city, 1 year of pastry, and I go back to Puerto Rico or figure out what my next step would be. And that was almost 10 years ago.
Wow.
2 months time.
That's incredible. 10 years. You've been like working your butt off in the last 10 years. I can only imagine.
It is. Wow. It was definitely a transition. I think you hit it on the nail earlier. Like, you know, engineers think in a very different way. It's very similar to pastry, like in some ways, because we plan a lot. There's a lot of like planning, right? And our formulas need to be right before things go into the oven, before things go into the ice cream machine. But I think that the slowness of, or I wouldn't say the slowness, but the approach of engineers is a lot calmer and a lot more cool and collected than high speed. Like, we got to go plate this. The client is waiting. People are paying. They're hungry. They're tired. They're this or that. So that transition was definitely one of the biggest hurdles to kind of overcome, you know, I think.
You know, there's another chef in Boston that she's a pastry chef. She owns Myers and Chang. And do you know Joanne Myers?
Joanne Chang. Yeah, Flower Bakery. Plenty of,
you guys know each other?
Sticky buns. I do not know her personally, but I had so many sticky buns while I was in Cambridge. So many sticky buns.
She's one of the most, she's so nice. And I haven't talked to her in years, but when we were more and more contact, I could just be like, I'm in Boston. And she'd be like, I have a bag waiting for you at the bakery. And it would just be all these pastries.
She's a huge inspiration. I bought her book when I was still in Puerto Rico.
I still
have it somewhere in here. Yeah.
I think you guys should meet. Anyway, well, I love that. And then you just decided, I want to pursue this passion for a little bit longer. You got out of ICE and you got an opportunity right away, I'm sure.
I did. I was very fortunate that I did my externship at Per Se, and that opened the door to the chef at the time there, the pastry chef, knew so many other chefs in the city, because, you know, the pastry circle is very small, really, in the city compared to like the nation. Mm-hmm. So next thing I know, I'm staging at Cafe Balud, where I spent my next like 3 years, 2 years and a half, you know.
Okay. I mean, there's a theme here. Excellence.
Lots of work for sure. It's a blur at this point. Like,
yeah. I mean, you've had your head down for 2 years and just, so you probably feel maybe, I don't know, maybe you don't, because you're relatively, you told me, I should tell everybody, I also went and photographed Orlando on site at La Bernadette. I spent 4 hours with you. I would have spent all day there.
Thank you for, really, thank you for your time. I'm all stoked to have you around.
It was amazing. I love being in kitchens. And I'm not always in fine dining kitchens. And this was really, really lovely. And what really struck me was, my goal is to photograph everybody that's on the podcast. It hasn't worked out yet. You're the first person. So. But what I loved about being with you at the restaurant was everybody we passed, you introduced me to. And I've worked with a lot of people and no one's ever done that. And I really appreciated that. You know, I thought that was so gracious and so respectful of me and everybody that works there. I just wanted to say thank you. That was kind of beautiful.
Thank you.
Anyway, I'm going to show the pictures at some point. I mean, I was super happy with what I got. So I'm going to jump into these questions. When you were just starting to figure out what you wanted to do and be in your life, was there a moment or a memory sort of solidified the idea? Was there, you know, was there an aha moment? Was there just like this clear picture for you that this is what I want to do?
There's like a, I think like a series of, you know, like moments that led up to mustering like the bravery, I guess, like the courage to say, okay, I can come back to this, but I really, really want to test this out. And that was mostly during my internship in Cambridge. It became very clear that, you know, that path, that career path was possible. It was going to take a lot of work. I was definitely going to be baking way more because I was going to need to relieve some stress out of work. And
this was the chemical engineer path?
Yes, yes. And like, or academic in a way. And I think I was having a conversation with my grandfather from my mother's side who started out in engineering, but, you know, back in the day, he had 8 kids and he needed to feed them. So on his like 6th kid, he left engineering school on his 3rd year, which, you know, this was, I'd like to say 60 years ago almost. And that was a huge achievement for someone in Puerto Rico to be doing engineering in that time. And, you know, from a very rural kind of like mountain area. And just before having mom, my grandfather decides to switch, right? Because of necessity, he became a policeman. And in the process, he got drafted in, by the army and he started cooking in the army. And I think grandpa was telling me these stories, right? About how his life kind of like went by. And I remember the hammock. I remember the moment when he's like just swinging himself and saying, just thinking to himself, I guess, like, one of the best things that happened to me was getting in the army because I got to cook for others. And that's when I started cooking for real. And I'm like, what do you mean? And he's like, well, after that, I went to Atlantic City, which is what everyone was doing at the time to make money and started working in hotels.
Oh, wow.
And he was a cook there for however long. I didn't know this in like 16 or 17 years of life, you know, present with my grandfather around. I had no idea that he had been like a cook or a chef somewhere in the States before he became this grandfather figure for me.
Wow.
And he said, you know, there's something about cooking. You need to have like the right heat and the right seasoning. And if you don't put those two things in, like, it won't work out. And something, that simple statement and that sort of passion at the same time that he had for reducing it to that really spoke to me, because at the time I felt I needed something that was less like academic and like kind of like what's next? What am I going to do? Am I going to do research? Am I going to go into pharmaceuticals? Am I going to do this? But cooking is something that I can touch and do in real time. And it has that immediate effect of like others really enjoy it and I enjoy doing it. So that's when it became clear for me.
Wow. That's a beautiful quote too. I can remember it. It takes time, ingredients. What did he say?
Heat and seasoning, which is so like, it's so reductive, but at the same time, so true. Yeah. So I think that was one of the aha moments, hammock, grandpa, and just those two words.
I love that. How do you find inspiration in your work? Like what do you have a practice around how you go about being inspired?
Not to sound cliche, but there's inspiration everywhere. That's for sure. But I think that in different phases of my career, the main source of inspiration has looked a little different every time. Like when I was starting out and I needed like to prove myself and all this stuff, I was looking at what, you know, chefs in 3 Michelin star restaurants were doing to kind of like inspire me to push to that level. And then, you know, it's not to say that I feel in any way like I've achieved all of that. I think that now what really inspires me is what cooks are looking for and my team is looking for, and how do I meet them and at the same time meet the level that the clients are expecting. So it's a challenge, and that challenge is the inspiration. I think my team challenges me daily, and I love that. I think that that's that's a big part of kind of like stepping forward and kind of like moving in a positive slope, so to speak.
And when you say what your cooks are needing from you, is it more like, you know, guiding them and helping them kind of understand? Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah. My background was first in science. So when I started learning pastry in like the, you know, French technique sort of way and, you know, the classic training and all that, I started kind of like merging the information of like, this is pâte à choux, for instance, or, you know, cream puffs. And from the technical side and in the kitchen, this is how pâte à choux actually works from like a science side. And sometimes I think to give tools to my cooks that they can use in the future and manipulate things, because at the end of the day, like all food is like a material. It's something that you can morph into something, right? You can make it as rustic looking or as refined or linear as you want to. And all of those things require like a certain level of understanding, and not mastery necessarily, but yes, understanding of how you can use that and cook it. And so I try to give that sort of extra bit of information that next time that they're, you know, doing a tasting for themselves, for a job or for a client, a VIP client, they know that they can swap out, you know, pistachio paste for butter in some of the recipes, and they get really good pistachio flavor just because they're both acting as fats in the moment for that particular recipe.
Okay.
So that's part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. What about for your personal creativity? I know you find it everywhere, but I know you go to the farmer's market. I mean, only because I see your Instagram, but I know you find a lot of inspiration there. Yeah. So ingredients.
Yeah. I was lucky that when I first moved here, and ICE now is in almost like One World Trade Center area, Brookfield Place.
Mm-hmm.
ICE was in Chelsea originally.
Yeah.
Right across the street from like Italy area. So to get to ICE, I would always go through the market on the days that it was open. So it became sort of like both a thing to not meditate necessarily, but just like space out and take in what's going on in the season and with the people in the season. And that is a huge source of inspiration and calmness. I think that for work, especially, it feels good to be surrounded by nature-loving folk.
I will say that's one thing I do love about living in New York City, having the Union Square Market. It is like in the heart of the city, or, you know, it's in a main artery of the city, and going through that space is really inspiring.
Yeah.
Even if you don't cook, I think going through all those vendors and seeing the variety that they grow is incredible. I find it inspiring. I've never experienced a city that was so centered around that, you know? Mm-hmm. When you're in a rut creatively, is there anything you do for yourself to kind of get out of it? Or when you're just maybe not feeling great, you know, we all have those mornings.
Yeah.
Is there a practice or any sort of routine you do? Or
walking helps a lot for me, kind of like spacing out, putting some music on in the background or not, taking in the sounds too. When it's like summer or spring, like it's really nice outside and not so cold. So walking is very easy. Lately, I think, and as I grow older, I'm getting more comfortable with kind of like being a little bit more open about when I'm in a rut or when I'm feeling a little kind of like not really flowing on the creative side. So I'll talk to people around me, people that I think, my friend family, if you will, and even my cooks at times, be like, what do you think of this? Or what do you think of that? And if I'm taste testing stuff and I'm making like actual like desserts or pastries, I'll have them taste it and think like, do you think this is too similar to such and such? Or do you think that, like, do you like this about that? And that sort of like back and forth really helps me get out of my own sort of like mumble of
nice.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Slowly. I don't open up very easily. So
it's
a minute to kind of like, you know, untangle that. But
yeah. Looking back, you know, in the last 10 years, what an incredible journey you've had. If you could give advice to your younger self, you know, maybe your first day of ICE, like if you could give Orlando 10 years ago advice, what would you say?
Twofold. One is to be braver, kind of like don't be afraid of the future, because that, as an engineer, I think, and even as a pastry person, like, you are always living in like what it can be like, the scenarios that can play out. And more often than not, you're on the worst case scenario. Like, that's you're kind of like preventing the stuff, you know, preventing the problems from happening, the fires, if you will. And I think that there's magic and like wonder to risk things. And it's not a big deal if you fall and trip and it doesn't look exactly perfect. So don't be so afraid to try new things. Don't be so afraid to try things that you're unfamiliar with. Mastery doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be perfect every single time. So then why make it a thing from the beginning? And then the second one would be to not make things personal on the professional end. I think that when I first started out, especially like in my first like 5 years, and I'll be very frank about this, like I was training myself to be an engineer, and you know, the pay level, the starting pay level was whatever that was at the time, right? When I decided to be a cook, that dropped to $11.50 an hour for countless hours of work. Of course, there's like a cultural barrier that I had to cross. You know, it was from Puerto Rico or from my brief experience in the Northeast to a colder climate here and a faster pace and all this stuff compared to a tropical island time. Yeah. And that sort of switch didn't become immediately clear for me that like, with that, the people and the business side of things would also change. So not take it so personal, because I felt at times that I was failing on more ways than one. If I didn't grasp the technique or the skills fast enough, I felt like I wasn't meant to do this. So many times throughout every single, let's say if I was at Cafe Balut 3 years, at least once a month, I would feel that I wasn't really like, maybe this wasn't the right path. I'm just not cut out to confront, or how can I say this? Like deal with the interpersonal side of like, if I burnt the cookies, then that means that not only do I have to start over again, but my chef is yelling at me and telling me that I suck, basically.
Yeah.
And it's not coming from a personal end. They're feeling the same pressure their bosses were feeling and so forth. And it's a chain that COVID really helped kind of like break apart, I think, and kind of like shed some light on the not so great things about the culture that we had prior to. So don't take it personal, Orlando. Move forward and just keep doing you.
Yeah, that's awesome. I can hear you say that. And I'm like, I mean, yeah, you've done everything incredibly well. I know we never feel like that, right?
No.
We never do.
Absolutely.
People tell me that, and I'm like, I wake up some mornings and I'm like, what is happening?
Like, why? Yeah.
Yeah. But I hear you. I hear you. So what do you think is like the recipe for success, in your opinion?
I think
there's no right answer. I think it's everybody has their personal recipe.
Flexibility. And when I say flexibility, I think, I mean, there's one thing to be, you're true to yourself, right? But I think also like being curious about what is happening outside of you and your life and your story is very helpful in kind of like tackling change and tackling progress and making taking those steps forward. Because every time that I felt that I wasn't gonna make it, or that I wasn't cut out for this, at least one moment of saying like, but maybe yeah, I can. And if others have done it before me, then it's not impossible. And it's okay if it's not exactly right in this moment. I'm gonna try to get it better next time. And those kind of like structures of like what's best or what's great or what's not are really like, we know what's good and what isn't, but we don't, everything else that we add on top of that is an extra. It's kind of like, it's stuff that we've, layers that we've put on to make it like more refined or more rustic, and then label it as a certain thing or another. So it's okay to be flexible with yourself and give yourself some grace and try to move forward in a direction that you feel is right, whether that's the same direction that you were taking before or a completely different one. And that definitely is what I felt when I switched careers. And I think to this day, it's something that I feel every so often when I feel the doubt creeping on me and trying to kind of like take over.
Nice. So it comes down to flexibility. Being flexible. I still have to work on that one. Flexibility within my own, you know, expectations and mindset and perfection, you know.
Yeah.
That's a hard.
It's hard. And it's a stress causer for sure. Yeah. Spiraling is very easy. And you're trying to
big time.
Like, hold your ground, but at the same time, like, should I adapt? Is it necessary? Am I giving in? Is it, because there's so many ways you can play it out in your mind. But at least so far, it's been good to give myself a little bit of flexibility in that sense.
Yeah, flexibility. I watched your commencement address for Wow, that must have been so. Orlando did the 2023 graduation commencement address for the ICE graduates. I mean, I cannot imagine how stressful that was.
So stressful.
Also, I loved your speech. I thought it was beautiful to you, by the way.
Thank you. It was stressful because when I graduated, it wasn't that. We just had like a, you know, we were 11 people in 11 cooks in a room with our cakes behind us. And the parents that showed up, it's like a hug and a certificate and aha, and like, oh, most likely to succeed, most likely to this, most. Okay, goodbye. Next class in.
Yeah.
And to you know, get to the point where it's almost, I think there were 140 pastry. So cooks going into the industry, that was incredibly humbling and exciting, because we saw a little bit of darkness during COVID where like I didn't know if you know, people were gonna want to stay doing this in this city, which is challenging in and of itself. Yeah. So it was good. Thank you.
Mm. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, that would be kind of like a nightmare.
Yeah.
It would be, it's one of those things it makes you not go to sleep at night or it keeps you up. But I mean, incredible that you did it.
Thank you.
So what do you think makes someone especially good at their job?
I think you just said it, especially. I think when you focus on one thing, like if you can make one thing very you or very right or very different and make it stand out in a way that becomes part of what your DNA is putting into that, then that makes you stand out and be unique and successful in its own right. Because of course you're not going to try to do something that's like hard level. You're going to try to like push it to where you can push the most. And if you're able to infuse some of you in that, then that's a recipe for success. I think it's hard to get to that point because you have to first like unshed the layers of things that were put on you as you grew up. Right. And when you were getting trained in whatever field it was, like, I remember even as a, let's say science, like a lab worker, like the perspective and the opinion of the professors that were writing these journals was basically the map that I was going to use to do stuff, right? I needed to be able to figure out like what my perspective or my kind of like approach was going to be to get to there. I knew that I was going to put in the work. I just needed to, and the same thing applied in pastry. I knew that I was going to put in the work. I just needed to figure out how to make it more me, or how do I think it's more, how can I say this?
Your voice.
My voice. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I mean, that's like, it sounds like you were talking about photography. It's similar, very similar.
Yeah.
Finding your voice, but you have to unpack everything. And you have to learn your skills so well that it becomes second nature. And then I feel like you can start to say something.
Exactly.
Do you have any closing thoughts? Anything else you want to share with the audience? Any bits or words of encouragement?
I think for anyone that's, especially like in food, it's very easy. We work with perishable product, which is not the case in a lot of arts. These things, when you paint, when you photograph, it lasts for forever, basically for a lifetime at the very least. Our field of work has perishability, right? It has like an expiration date. It has a moment where it's like peak freshness, but then it kind of like declines strongly after that. So in a similar way, when we have like dark days, when we have days where not only are our customers or diners being very difficult, but also things are not lining up, when things are kind of on the dark side, don't forget to tap into whatever brought you here first. Keep that close to you because it'll make you shine brighter, especially when it's dark. People look towards light when it's dark. So when it's dark for you, try to find that in yourself. It sounds very cliche-ish, but it helps. It helps.
No, I think that's beautiful, actually. Thank you. I need to remember that. How can we find out more about you, Orlando? Where can people learn more, read more about you?
I've been very blessed this year, especially that, you know, La Bernardin has been awarded a couple of things this year. We got 4 stars in the New York Times, which was a huge, I never thought that that was very stressful, but great. Thank God we're past it. And then Michelin 3 and now La Liste. This has been great. So whenever people want to try some desserts from me and my team, which I'm so grateful for them, for everyone that's been supporting me in the last 10 years of this, people can definitely go to the lounge at La Bernardin and try some pastries, try some fish too, because, you know, the restaurant is known for that. And get some good wine, get a cocktail or a mocktail and enjoy some sweetness in Midtown. Yeah.
Amazing. I love that. Okay, wait. So 4 stars. I mean, there's not that many restaurants that have been given 4 stars.
Yeah, I think the biggest. So for me, I think the part that hit me really hard, and it was weeks after the review came out, was when I got into this, the places that I saw, like La Bernardin, were like my North Star, right? Like my kind of like, this is where I ultimately would love to, but in a dream, like I would never. And to see, you know, it in print and like in my hands, and like, I work here and I was part of this journey. And, you know, I was in the kitchen when we heard that this guy was potentially eating with us. And, you know, that was big. I think it's been a great year. It's been a challenging year.
Amazing. Amazing. One last thing. Is there anything you want to recommend to people? Anything that's inspired you, an article or a book or anything that you're like, oh, I love this and I recommend it?
I think I entered like my, you know, like how Taylor Swift has these like eras. Like my personal development book era was like right when I started my 30s. So it's been 5 years of and I really love Jen Sincero. She wrote You're a Badass, or How to Be a Badass, Money Too. Like there's a couple of books that she's written about personal development, and her style of writing, the lessons are very similar to things that you find elsewhere, but her style of writing, and she also has like audiobooks. So I usually listen to a chapter or two while I'm on the subway. It's very like in your face, very simple and kind of like broken down to like not verbose, not kind of too philosophical either. It's just kind of like you got this and you just need tap into the right energy sometimes and try to keep your frequency high because it'll come through your work. That was a huge revelation to me. And it's definitely something that I'm challenged with every day. I think that it's challenging to kind of like keep your level kind of as high as you can, because it's for you, not necessarily even for others. It's for you to be happy. And that in turn makes other happy. Yeah.
That's great. Wow. I've never heard of this book. I'm going to totally check it out. Well, Orlando, I can't thank you enough. I'm sure all the listeners are going to be very inspired by this. And I can't wait for them to go to La Bernardin and be like, I heard Orlando on Depth of Field podcast and I want all the desserts.
Oh, man. Thank
Watch you. Out. Somebody might do that.
I welcome all and feedback. Any feedback, always welcome.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out of a beautiful Saturday here in New York and for talking with me. I'm so thankful.
Thank you. Thank you for your time. And thank you for joining us for a couple of hours at La Bernardin. You know, I've told you this before, like I'm a huge fan of your work. I love your photography. The few things that I've seen that you've taken that are very like personal to you, like the photographs that you had at your place one time I went, they show a lot of like how much you care about culture and about people in like the simplest moments, but that tap into kind of like the ancestry and how things have progressed to how they are now.
Thank you. I love being with you and I loved having you on this. So you'll have to come back. We'll do another deep dive. Thank you again. And I'm just going to thank everybody for listening. Again, this is Depth of Field Podcast, A Change of Perspective. Y'all have a great day.